Thank you so much for the word today, Lord. We thank you for the wisdom of God concerning marriage status, single status, Father. We thank you so much for the singles that are present today, Father. We thank you for their hearts to hear your word and to know your will for their life. I ask, Lord, that you'll speak through my mouth and think through my mind, that I'll be an oracle of God. Holy Spirit, bring to remembrance the word, the things you've placed in our hearts, Father. Any experience that we may have and any experience beyond that that you quicken to us, Father, that we can minister. We know that marriages, these future people who will get married, Father, those who will get married, that their marriages will be better because of what they learn today and tomorrow. We thank you that revelation knowledge is to us tonight. In Jesus' name, we pray. Amen. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming. And, you know, at a singles advance, we've got a huge gamut of singles. Sometimes you have people that are single because they've never been married. Sometimes you have people that are what we call single again, single for the second time. And I definitely am going to hit some things where the singles for the second time are going to help me. And they're going to say, hey, man, because I tell you, they've been there once. Well, until you get married, what you're thinking marriage is usually you just can't wrap your mind around it. I don't know anybody who is married, who has been married before, says, oh, yeah, I just knew what it was going to be like that person. No, you're way different. It was a whole nother thing. And hardly anybody could have told you or was willing to tell you the challenges that exist in two people who aren't totally spiritually mature coming together, trying to live together. People do not get divorced because they're happy. They get divorced because they done had all the hell they can take between those two individuals, and they say it'd be better to be without you than to be with you. Now, the majority of people who get married in the United States actually end up divorced. And those were not oddball people who didn't love each other. They got married by shotgun. They got married because they had to. These individuals who chose to get married. These are people who wanted to get married. These are people who have thought it would last forever. So don't mistake the fact that you think the one you're with is the one and it'll never be different. I'm not going to make any mistakes, because most people make the mistake. Some of the knowledge you're going to get today and tomorrow is not even available just out there in the average church or out there on the street. Satan is not going to let it be out there, because it will keep your life and your marriage joyful. And Satan is not to anybody having a good life or a joyful time. He wants to tear it up as much as possible. But I want to lay down as we get started here a few ground rules. If you have any questions, I want the seminar to be tailored to you. Helen and I were going over some notes earlier. I got so many notes. It's just like this marriage seminar. There's no way you could hold this in 2 days. You can't hold what I know and the notes that I have in a year, teaching it every Sunday. It's that much on the dynamics of singles, marriage, and any kind of interpersonal relationships between people long term. When I say it, I got 6 of this and 8 of that and 12 of that and 3 points of this and 9 and essential points of this and 10 things you can't deal without on this and 4 things you can't deal without on that. Let me straighten out this mic here. We've got it set up a little different here. And I think it's having a little problem because it's set a little differently. Let's see if we can't get this straight. I might have to wear a shirt, a regular suit and tie, just so I can put it on my tie next time. But there's so many different things we can do. And what we're going to do is, the reason I want you to ask questions is because I want to make sure that I address your greatest needs. Now, remember, this is what kind of seminar? A single seminar. So I'm going to answer that one question for you now. What about sex? There's none, okay? You are single. This is not a marriage seminar, so you don't have to ask that question or anything related. What kind of sex can we have? You single? None. Can we turn upside down and have sex? You're single. Don't worry about it, okay? Ask that later when you're close to getting married. So those questions don't even belong to you. They shouldn't be on your mind. It'll get you in trouble if you keep that in your mind while you're single. But anything related to being single and preparation for marriage, all that's fair game. Write out your question on a piece of paper. You can put in a bucket there or a bucket over there. And between the sessions, I'll go through them. And we're going to have a question and answer session. That's the last session tomorrow at 12 o'clock. And we're going to go through them. And it doesn't matter how in depth they get or whatever. And, you know, if there's a lot of questions, we'll just stay in those that have to go. Can go into the bookstore, get the tape and go. But I'll stay here. And Helen probably, too, will stay here as long as we need to make sure all your questions get answered to the best of our ability. The best of our knowledge where we answer it. You put them in there tonight, and some, if it's, I don't know many that's too difficult, but if you got something that's too difficult, hey, give me this time to study it out and get some answers. Don't already have an answer on it. But I've been pastoring for 12 and a half years, been in ministry for almost 20 years. You see a lot of stuff. You go through a lot of things. There might be a few things that I might know that's just like that, blow it off the top of my head. The rest of it, we'll believe God and Spirit and go study it out, and we can get it to you. because I prayed and I've been believing God that you guys will have wonderful, awesome marriages if you decide to marry. And if you don't want to get married, that you have a wonderful, awesome, fulfilling life, because that's not something you have to do. We're going to take a look at that. You're in the middle of a married society and you may not have any desire to be married. We're going to talk about that. There are people in the Bible who God said have no desire, and he called it a gift. So don't misunderstand. That's a good thing to be. We're going to take a look at that. I'll write all the questions at the end. At the end of the teaching, I'll answer all the questions. I'll remain after as long as you need me to. I want you to list all your concerns, because like I said, it's important. We want to minister to you. For those that may not be born again, we are answering from a Christian perspective. So you'll realize that we will go to the scripture. We will apply biblical things. We will apply love as being the basis for any interpersonal relationship. This is a church. We are ministering from a Christian viewpoint. I guarantee you that's the one that works, because the Christian divorce rate still is a little lower than the worldly divorce rate. It should be way lower, as in non-existent. But that's not all of us are mature. And marriage, like I told the married people, I say, have you found out that marriage belonged to mature Christians? And they say yes, because everybody admit they weren't mature enough to deal with this person's idiosyncrasies. It's bothering them. If you're mature, it doesn't bother you. Because, you know, I got idiosyncrasies, but doesn't bother God. He loves me anyway. He accepts me just the same. That's what maturity would do. When you're immature, you try and change people. You try and make people. And that's what people run into when they get married. We want to make sure that you understand these things before you get in it, so you can make a wise decision whether you're ready for that now, so that you won't have the kind of hell that you want to get divorced. But you say, oh, no, this is wonderful. I'm so glad I got prepared. I reached a certain level of spiritual maturity. I have knowledge and understanding and wisdom. I have an abundance. It's time to get married when you have so much love to give that you want to give it to somebody else for the rest of your life. Other than that, if you need, you're tired of being alone, you're tired of people calling you old maid or spinster, or you, when you're going to settle down and quit sowing wild oats, any of that mess is all the wrong reason to get married. It's a wrong reason to get married. When you've got yourself together and you've got an abundance of love and maturity, and you can deal with folks that's got problems, because anybody you marry is going to have some problems. I don't think there's a lot of spiritual giants lined up to marry us. You know what I'm saying? I don't think they're out there. So therefore, we're going to find somebody who needs a little work, but we want to know how much work they need before we say I do, so we don't say I wished I hadn't. Or we change our mind and take it back in the divorce court. No, I don't. I said I do, but I mean I don't. That's what I meant. That was a mistake. Okay? And some of us have been there. You know what I'm talking about. Now, I want to open up by saying there's something that you have as a single person that married people don't have. I'm going to sit down most of the time, because no need of me standing up. But you have a word that when I had the marriage seminar 2 months ago, the married people wish they had this, and they don't have it anymore. And that's the word freedom. You don't have it. They don't call it wedlock for no reason. You get locked up. Anybody been married? Yeah, you feel it. You sense it. It's there. You can't just do what you want to do, go where you want to go. You are free now. If you want to be a missionary to Africa, you don't have to ask nobody's permission. If God tells you to go in Africa and you work and you get your money, you go to Africa, you can go. If you say you're going to the south of France to get a massage on the beach, you can go. When you get married, you don't look at your husband and tell him you're running off to the south of France, because no, we're not. And he doesn't look at you and say, I'm going to the south of France. You say, no, you're not. When you get married, you give up the freedom to go where you want to go and do what you want to do. And you need to understand that, because a lot of people don't understand that. You're going to find out that you have in each of us, each of you here, and Helen and I had it when we got married, each of us has an ideal of what it's going to be like when we get married. But in all of those visions and all those dreams, we forget the other person might have a different ideal. We do it. Oh, when I get married, you see little girls playing. When I grow up, he's going to this, we're going to this kind of car, we're going to do this. And oh, let's play house, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do the other. And then you get married and guys like, no, I don't like doing that. All of a sudden it's like, and when I had my dream, he didn't have a brain. He didn't even have desires. He just did what I wanted him to do. And there are women who are married who are upset because their husband didn't do what they want him to do. But you got to realize you didn't marry yourself. You married somebody else who had a different vision. They might have had a vision of living in the country and hunting wild game out back. And you might have had a vision of being a country girl, a city girl. being in the city on Park Avenue, kind of like the Green Acres theme thing. You know, you want to go to Paris and this other stuff, and he wants to go smell the hay. But yet people may meet in college, they may meet in church, but they don't date communicatively in such a way that they dig these things out. And I would tell you the truth, because it is true. Strangers are usually who gets married. I can tell when you come to premarital counseling, I begin to ask questions. How many kids does he want? We ain't discussed that. How many kids do you want? Well, I want this many. I know how many I want. What? You want that many? I'm not having that many kids. And here it is. They're getting ready to get married. They're planning to get married. If they didn't go to premarital counseling, they wouldn't even know they didn't discuss how many kids. What about how you get along with his mother? Oh, she's nice. Do you want to live with her? No, she's nice, but I don't want to live with her. Well, if your father dies, who's your mother going to stay with? Well, my mom's going to stay with me. But I thought you marrying her. She said your mom ain't going to stay with you all. Have you all discussed this? No. But there's people get divorced over that. The mother-in-law moves in, two women in the kitchen. Mother-in-law won't stay out the other one's business. She say, I've had it. All kinds of mess goes on because strangers get married. You need to know the person you marry. And remember, dating is a process of elimination. When I dated different people, I dated a girl, try and find my pink slip. Boom, that's out of here. That ain't working. Poop, that's out of here. Same thing you dating a guy. You are looking for who's not qualified because you don't want to waste your time dating and going out with somebody who's not even qualified. You don't want to waste your time. Now, it may seem cruel, but do you know there's more people out there you shouldn't marry than you should? So if you just let everybody come in the door and you ain't holding your pink slip, you might let one slide into holy matrimony with you. And then we're saying, if the unbelieving one seeks to be with you, then stay. But I don't like it. That's all right. You picked them. They're yours now. Deal with them. But I don't. He's mean to me. He doesn't walk in love. Well, maybe he didn't know nothing about love when you dated him. But you were infatuated. There's somebody that says I'm pretty. There's somebody that makes me feel good. She says I'm handsome. All that eromania, that romance stuff needs to be dropped before you marry somebody. Now, I'm not talking about stop having romance. I'm saying don't get caught in the romance. Don't think it's going to be like that. That's married people if it stays like that. It doesn't stay like that. That doesn't mean you can't still be romantic and good. But what I found is you have all that height and all the excitement in that dating. Because most of it's infatuation. It's all new. You only see her when she's got her hair right and her teeth brushed and comb. You only see him when he's smelling good and is clean and well-shaven. It's the only time you see each other because you get ready for your date. But once you get married, you see them unready. You see them another way. You see them acting another way. And you married somebody you never, ever saw like that. I mean, you married a stranger. I didn't know her teeth were fake. I didn't know he wore a toupee. I didn't know she had those fake lift your breasts up things. I thought she was real. That was one of my favorite attributes. I didn't know it was fake. You know, there's all kinds of stuff people don't tell people before they get married. But when you get married and you find out, it creates a problem. It creates a problem. And that problem, let's see if we can get this straight. That problem, people really get upset. I think I'm going to wear my regular stuff tomorrow to make sure this doesn't cut out. But that problem is serious. Because now you're in wedlock. It is a lock. All the divorce stuff that we did, all that wasn't supposed to be happening. It was not so. You're free. Do not underestimate your freedom or give up your freedom lightly because you will be in wedlock when you get married. I'm not going to put down marriage. Marriage can be very beautiful. But like I said, you start off in that infatuated bliss. Then you go from the infatuated bliss to you get married and you come into disillusionment. Well, this isn't the way I thought of it. That person, how come you don't want to do what I want to do when I want to do it? How come you don't think like I think and act like I think? And you begin to see the reality of the person, and then you have to spend years building love. Because infatuation goes away when you get face to face with that person day to day. And if you didn't already have love, you can literally bottom out. And that's when people get divorced. Instead of building it, dating long enough to really get to know the person, to get to love the individual, to that love that you established, you do know the person. You know the good, bad, ugly. And you say, okay, this is cool. This is going to work out. And then they don't surprise you. So you don't become disillusioned. One example that I use, I tend to illustrate in illusionment. I remember something, one of the guys in Bible school that shared with me. Technically in marriage, I think I'm getting too close to that with this board. Technically in marriage, this is what your expectation is. You expect that that's what marriage is going to be. And let's say your expectations are false. What you expect is not real. And most people haven't been married. Their expectations of marriage is not real. They expect that marriage is the same as dating. They expect when they met this person and the tingliness and the goose pimples and them always looking good and her always being nice and polite and him always being handsome and debonair and holding doors. They expected it would be like that forever. Anybody know it doesn't stay like that? All the divorced people know and all the married people know it does not stay like that. It's only because people are putting their best foot forward till they trap you. And once they got you, they go back to being their carnal self. So what you want to do is date them long enough till you see how carnal are they. We all have some carnality, but how carnal are they? Story about this one girl. She was a church girl and she was dating a guy. And she came to church and she said, "Pastor, you know, we so-and-so got married." And the pastor said, "Oh, you know, because she went to the church. Oh, you know, you got married." He said, "Well, who did your counseling?" "Oh, we did our own counseling. We did our own counseling." You know, he's like, "You don't control nobody." Just like, "I don't control nobody." You try and tell people they need to go to premarital counseling. It's only to help them, not to hurt them. But they're afraid they're going to find out they shouldn't marry that person. We're not going to stop them from marrying them, but they're afraid they're going to find out they shouldn't. And they don't want to blow the vision and the fantasy. But love may be blind, but marriage will knock your eyes wide open. You will say, "I was blind, but now I see." And the thing is you want to see as much as you can see before you say "I do" to see if you want to say "I do." Because that's not the only person to marry. It's a lot of people out there to marry. It's a lie of Satan saying that's the only one. I'll never get anybody. That's the only one. If you settle, you're going to pay the price for it. Either in a divorce or an unhappy matrimony. Or a hard road to maturity to where the two of you do learn to love and to get along. God is only trying to help you, and a good pastor is only trying to help you from having a hard problem that they know is going to happen if you roll the dice. Because most folk out there, you shouldn't marry. They're not ready to be married. Whether you are one or not, we'll find that out. We'll find it out as we go through it. But what you have in marriage, if you got somebody with the la-la land here, they're off with some false expectations. And let's say the reality of marriage is right here. That's really what real marriage is. Real marriage, I mean, a good marriage. I mean, I'm talking about a good marriage is sometimes we will fight. Sometimes we will argue. Nothing critical, but we're trying to fill each other out. "I didn't know you didn't like that." "Well, I'm mad that you did it." "Oh, honey, I'm sorry. I didn't know that. I wasn't aware of that." You have the communicative skills to work your way through it. It's not divorce. Nothing's going to fall apart. A good marriage is not people never having a disagreement. Whenever you got two people, there's going to be disagreement. That's why God created authority. That's why he created authority. He created authority because he wants people to flow and cooperate. If you went to your workplace and everybody was equal, somebody's going to want to do your job tomorrow when you go. If you got a nicer job, they're going to want to do it. "I don't want to work in the plant. I want to sit in the air conditioner and do your job." "Yeah, but it's not your job to do that." "Well, we're all equal." No, there's a boss who says, "This is what you do, this is what I do, this is what I hired you to do." And if somebody in your office is going to say, "Get out the office." And because that person's authority, they're going to go. Authority, all authority is of God, the Bible says. It keeps order. It keeps peace. Now, sometimes you have people get married. This is a good marriage. But they think this is a good marriage. Again, they were raised watching the nursery rhymes and hearing the Cinderella stuff. And being aware that Prince Charming was going to ride up on a horse. And this guy comes and he just makes you feel so good. Most of that is your perception of him more than it is him. But somebody says you look good. Somebody makes you feel special. And if you're led by your feelings and not led by faith and wisdom, then when they make you feel like that and all you're looking at is, "Oh, he got soft, curly hair. We're going to have pretty babies." Your girlfriends all say you got a good man. Now, you know, folks get married on that kind of stuff. They ask other people, "Do you think he's a good man?" And I'm talking about not just getting a counsel. They're literally saying, if your girlfriend say, "Girl, he fine." They don't know him. You know him better than they do. What would you ask them for? They're going to talk about the superficial. Well, girl, he got a job. He got some money. Oh, girl, he doing that. All those are good things, but that's all they're looking at. He might have an anger streak that when he doesn't get his way, he acts like a 2-year-old child. There are very nice, handsome, debonair men who have beat their wife within an inch of their life. Everybody loves them and think they're wonderful, but their wife is afraid of them. They all said, marry him. He's a good catch, girl. You better wake up and see what's really going on and find out how to judge a person and date them long enough to really know them. Do not marry a stranger. Well, but we know each other 3 months, not enough time. We've known each other 6 months, not enough time. We've known each other a year, not enough time. I recommend a minimum, and that's for people who have some sense and are mature, a minimum of 2 years. Because you need to get past all this, and that's 2 years of dating communicatively. Not going to movies, that's all you do is go to the movies and hang out with a bunch. I mean, you're to the point where you take some walks on the beach and say, look, you know, what do you want out of life? What is your background? Where you want to be in 5 years? Where you want to be in 6 years? What's your plan? Do you have any money? How do you handle your money? Do you live on a budget? People get married and ask none of those questions. And then get mad when they don't have money when they get married. Well, he didn't have any then. Didn't you see she had more shoes than she had feet? You thought she was going to stop buying shoes when she married you? Well, my wife just always in the mall spending everything. She didn't hide that from you. You just chose not to look. You expected she would be whatever you expected your wife to be. You didn't even look at her. You saw she was pretty and she made you feel good about yourself. So you interpret it. So you got married. He made you feel good about yourself. So you got married. But you never really looked at reality. And reality is a good marriage. You're going to have some disagreements. You're probably going to get over infatuation and you're going to have to increase the love and you're going to build your way to love. If you date long enough, you have a degree of love to go to marriage in. It makes it a whole lot easier. You don't get married on infatuation because what's going to happen is your level of disappointment, how upset you are, is where your actual marriage is versus what you expected it to be. And most young ladies, because of these nursery rhymes, expect subconsciously when they get married, all their problems are going to go away. He's going to take care of the bills. I can make my money and have my career, but he's going to make sure to take care of the bills. He's going to make, but she didn't check to see if he knows I take care of bills. She didn't check to see if he has any savings for the future or if he's planning anything for retirement. She just expects, not reality, I expect that he's going to take care of that. He expects that she's going to cook. And that she knows how to, although she's never cooked a meal for him. He just expects she doesn't mind cleaning and mopping and doing the things that his mother did. He just expects that's what women do. After all, my mother did that and my mother's a good woman. That's what women do. But she's expecting Prince Charming to rescue her from the wicked stepmother who made her do the dishes and wash the clothes. Now, the reality of it is when you get married, if you continue, I always stop the nursery rhymes. I think most nursery rhymes are from the devil. We think they're innocent little stories, but they create false realities. Because it kind of implied in Snow White that the cleaning was bad. And that Prince Charming rescued her from the cleaning. They didn't see Prince Charming pick her up, take her home to the castle after the wedding, put his feet up on the sofa and say, them dishes are dirty, baby. My drawers are dirty. But that's the rest of the story. Like Paul Harvey says, that's the rest of the story. She just went to a different residence doing the same stuff. All that romance and stuff is going to settle down. Now, he's got to go do stuff, too, because not all la-la land for him. But you better check what he's expecting and know what you're expecting and see if those expectations are going to be compatible if you don't want to be unhappy. Because you will be as unhappy as the difference is between the actual reality of what your relationship is and your false expectations. And if you don't stop and think, what am I expecting? Let me analyze it. Let me talk to some married people. Is it realistic to think everything's going to work out? You can always tell people when they're lost in la-la land and come in for counseling and say, okay, you know, give me 5 things wrong with that person. Oh, you know, God put us together. It's just perfect. Just, you know, and one thing I like about him, I had some bad boyfriends, had some bad girlfriends, but, you know, we just work together so well. I look at them and say, you need to date longer. You don't know that person. They ain't nobody that good. You haven't dated them long enough, they've hidden their flaws from you, or you hadn't looked at them, you need to snap out of it. Need to snap out of it. You need to know 5 things you don't like about somebody before you marry them. I remember when Helen and I were premarital counseling, Pastor Butler said, I think he said 5 or 10, what's 5 things about her you don't like? And I had 5, I had more. He asked her, what's five things about him? She had five, she had more. He figured, okay, they passed out. When they probably ready, they already know they have crazy, each of them. But that's right, two crazy people along were good. Forgive me when I'm crazy, I'll forgive you when you're crazy, we're going to be all right. It's those folks living in false expectations who are super duper unhappy or trying to control each other or trying to manipulate each other or trying to change each other. I haven't married anybody of the couples I've married who were perfect people. Because you don't find any of those yet. And the person you're dating or the person you will find is likely not to be perfect. And if you are smart, you will date them long enough till you find the imperfections. Oh, Pastor, that take forever. So you're saying you're dating a big phony and they can hide it that long? Because what I'm trying to tell you, if you hadn't been married, is they won't be able to hide it when you're married. And you should find out what it is before you get married to them. You're not going to know everything about a person, but it's crazy to know nothing about them other than what they say. I remember stories in Bible school of how many people get married in Bible school and then get divorced. They get married in Bible school, 2 years out of Bible school, get divorced. Because, oh, she liked how much he was full of the word. We had this happen in Bible school when we went. Oh, she loved the fact he was full of the word and such ambition for ministry and so full of God. And they got married during Bible school. And they tell you when you come there, don't get married during Bible school. Because, see, this is a false reality right now. You're made to study the Bible 3 hours a day and then go do homework. You might study the Bible 8 hours a day for 2 years in Bible school. You know, you're a little bit different when you study the word of God 8 hours a day. You're a little bit different when you go home and do 4 hours of homework and 4 hours of classwork and you work in between. You're a little bit of a different individual. You're a lot more, you appear to be a lot more mature than you probably are. But do you have a maturity when you get out of Bible school to continue in the word? Or are you just going to school and getting the benefit of school? I knew more about calculus when I was in calculus class than I know about calculus now. Some of the things I got an A on the test, if you gave them to me now, I wouldn't have a slice of deal how to do it. Because in calculus class, it was on my mind. God was on my mind in Bible school. Walking in love was on my mind in Bible school. Being non-selfish and considerate was on your mind in Bible school. And you married them when they came to Bible school. Now they're out of Bible school and you find out that person really doesn't have any substance. They were just getting a byproduct of what they had to do to get good grades. They really don't have a good relationship with God. And then when they get away from the word, they begin to manifest works of the flesh. And that causes you problems when you are a man or woman married to a person who's manifesting hate and envy and strife and jealousy and bitterness and depression and all this other kind of stuff that makes people hard to live with. But now that's your actual reality. And it may not have come up to here. You just expected it to be there, but you had no reason to believe it would be there. You had no reason to believe it'd be there. You didn't date him long enough. You didn't look at him. You weren't cautious. You just was caught up in the romance of the feeling. Boy, I tell you, when he comes and picks me up, oh, I just, you know, you don't understand. He's just so nice. And then he held the door for me. Oh, that's just so wonderful. Right there saying you don't know the person. You're just talking about doors holding all that. You can get a doorman to hold a door for you. You can fall in love with him, too. You can get an athlete who cares nothing about you to come see you at a game and say, oh, here's a love, Johnny. Yo, I'm in love. You better know who this person is and know if they're capable of loving you or if they're just giving you words. I always tell the women, and I'm not trying to put anybody down, but I'm going to try and bust every bubble I can for the guys and the girls in the next 2 days. And one of them is if he can't keep his hands out your underwear, he does not love you. He loves himself. It is a total lie when a man says, baby, I love you so much. I want to be with you. I want to touch you. It's like, I just can't wait. I don't mean no harm. It's just, I love you so much. You're not getting that much out of it as much as he wants it. So how can he be saying, I love you so much? If you love me so much, go buy me some flowers. If you love me so much, do something I want. If you love me so much, pick me up in fellowship with God and drop me off in fellowship with God. If you love me so much. But it's not that. And guys, you know, I'm busting the bubble, but that's all of us. We don't even know we're not loving ourselves. We think we're really loving. And young men, we believe that stuff. We believe that I love you. That's why I want to touch you. Love has nothing to do with taking somebody out of fellowship with God. If we do a work of Satan and lead a girl into lust and all this other stuff, the same thing Helen going to talk about with the ladies. You love him. That's why you dress that way. Now you're tempting him to lust. You don't love him, putting him in temptation like that. To be a source for him to do evil thoughts or want to go and do things like that, that's not loving him. And I'm not saying cover yourself up with burlap and all that, but I'm saying you need to be decent. You need to be decent. When people pick you up, you need to be all the way dressed. You know what I'm saying? Not half naked, all the way dressed. Because a guy is going to look like that. Men are visually oriented. He's going to see that. He's going to want that. He's going to love that. He's going to like that. He's going to want some of that. And if he doesn't have any spiritual discipline himself, he's going to look at you as like, she loves me. She wants me. No means yes. She wants me. After all, why else would she dress up like that? If it ain't me, she wants somebody. All I know is she want it. And that's what a lot of guys say. And guys don't want to talk about, man, that girl wants it. You look at the way she dresses and say, she wants it and I got it for her. And all we do is look at the way she dresses. She's advertising that this you can have and you ain't got to put a ring on it. Just buy me a meal. Give me some flowers. Now, guys, my motto is, if it's been that easy for me, who else has it been that easy for? I never respected a girl that was willing to lay down for me. I'm talking about you. That's a line there. And you have to, she better have a whole lot else going for her, because basically that's telling you something about her, man. She's needy. High maintenance. Don't want to get into all that. Same thing with him. That could be high maintenance relationships. You don't want them. You want to have a good marriage, but I ask people before they get married, how many books have you read on marriage? How many people have you talked about marriage? And most time the answer is none. Well, how do you know you understand marriage? Well, we're going to be all right. We in love. Well, what's love? You know, I don't know. Don't know. You guys, some of you been around here, have been taught what love is. But most people, you ask them what's love, they don't know. But yet you're getting married and you're saying, I love this person. My goal in premarital counseling is make sure that if I marry someone and I ask them, do you love this person? Do you take them to blah, 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 that we understand the language. And I'm looking at them going, blah, 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 and they say, I do. Because that's essentially what it is if you don't know what it means. If somebody gets up and says, do you promise to love this person, to death do you part? And you say that and they say, I do. People are saying, I do. And they don't know what love. They think love is what they feel. Love is not a feeling. It's a decision. Now, hear that carefully. Love is not a feeling. It's got nothing to do with what you feel. God does not feel good about the way I treated him before I was saved, but he still loved me. God so loved this sad world that he sent us down, although we were yet in sin, he sent Jesus down to die for us. It wasn't because we were pleasing him. He loved us despite ourselves. Now, people want to get divorced because they say, I don't love him anymore. I don't love her anymore. Why did you decide to quit loving them? I didn't decide. They made me quit loving them. Can't nobody make you do it, but you don't know how they make me feel. So that's what it was all about all the time. It was all about a big con. It was all about you and how you feel. And now that you don't feel that way, you don't perceive that person that way, now you want a divorce. All that does is reveal that that person lied to the other person. They did not get married on love. They got married on lust. They felt good about it, and they were feeling good, and they're happy as long as you make them feel good or you do whatever they interpret to make them feel good, and when not, they want out. That's like the guy who didn't date the girl, girl who didn't date the guy long enough to really find out his true self. What the guy did was, you know, they dated. Again, I'll show you a graph here of the infatuation. And that reminded geometry students of things being inversely proportional, means that one goes up, the other goes down. If this chart right here is, let's say we'll put love down here, and we'll put infatuation up here. Infatuation. Now, these are degrees of infatuation. They increase. Degrees of love, they increase. Now, what this chart says is, as this chart right here, this is infatuation and this is love. Now, this is something you need to understand. This represents time. I'm sorry, that represents time. Indiscriminate amount of time depends on how they date, how maturely they date, to how long it's going to take before they reach these different points. If people date very maturely, they'll reach a point where infatuation and love intersect a lot quickly. If they date watching TV and movies all the time, then get married watching TV and movies all the time, probably 20 years from now, they still aren't in love. They may be comfortable with each other, but they're still in love. Now, what happens is when I first saw Sister Helen, something about her just It could be the sound of her voice. It could be the curve of her body. It could be the size of her. It could be the color of her skin, the texture of her hair. She first saw me, it could be the sound of my voice. Maybe she saw me in church preaching somewhere. And it's the fact that, oh man, look at that guy. He's got power. People are listening to him. It could be the fact, oh, he's got a nice car. Is any of that love? You can't meet anybody and love them. There's no such thing as falling in love. There's no such thing as love at first sight. That's lust at first sight. Okay? I see something I like in that person. It could be infatuation at first sight. When I first met her, let's say I first saw her. I met her in a restaurant. I was dating somebody, so I really didn't want to pay her any attention. But later, we ended up somewhere else, and then we were going to see the Point amusement park, and I saw her, and I spent the day at the amusement park, and oh, yeah, she had red shorts on and a red polo top. She was hot. I noticed it then because I wasn't with nobody else at the time. She was my date that day. And I was like, oh, yeah, Sookie, Sookie now, you know. Hello. I was smitten with her. But if later I found out she got a crazy lunatic brother that likes to kill all her old boyfriends, I would have never seen her again. Although we had a great first date, I didn't love her. I was infatuated with her, but I was more in love with me. And for self-preservation, I wouldn't have never seen her again. If I hung out with her and we kept dating and we're dating non-communicatively and different things, so we're moving real slow and say 3 years go by and we're just right here, I'm still mostly just like, man, that girl's fine. Oh, look at her shape. Oh, boy, look at her sound, her voice. Nothing substance. I'm not talking about her mind. I'm not talking about her visions. I'm not talking about her goals. I'm not talking about her intelligence. I'm still talking about how she look, the kind of car she drives, the fact that she makes a lot of money. I'm not even dealing with her at all. I'm still really in love with what the things around her, not in love with her because I still don't know her because we haven't dated communicatively. We went to the show. We had fun together. We went skating. We had fun. We did all, but I really don't know her. This is a hypothetical because we did some of those things because we had a pastor that taught us. So, but this is hypothetical. If we, 3 years go by, we're way past time folks talk about you ought to be married. We ain't dated 3 years now. Folks say you should be, but say if we've been dating non-communicatively and not asking the questions we need, not trying to check off on the list, okay, what kind of kids do you want to be? I'm not talking about the first date, but over that course of time, you're learning more and more about the person each date, not just settling for, I know his favorite movie. Let's get married. We got the same favorite movie. Let's get married. He likes the early show. I like the early show. We're perfect. God put us together. Not that kind of foolishness. They're inversely proportional. As time goes by, infatuation will naturally go down and love will increase because you will get to know the person even by accident better than you did before. You will see them sometimes in compromising situations where they're not always just perfect. Now, a lot of people put up a good fight and they maintain for a long time. This way, date them long enough till the hair comes down. Date long enough to the facade. See what happens. You date him long enough and you begin to see how he might react when one of his friends doesn't do what he wants him to do. Or his parents tell him to do something. Or his grades come in college. You get to know something then. Or his parents ask him to do something. He said, you know what? They ain't here. Let's go. Okay. You're marrying a conniver. A deceiver. Somebody who's not quite honest. Well, you date him long enough till you see what he does with his taxes. When he's trying to impress you or how he's cheating the government and how he gets away. That's when you begin to see the person, because those things are indicators of character problems. And a character problem can manifest in all kinds of ways. And when pressure comes, they get more intense. So when you marry them, I guarantee there will be pressures of two people who aren't perfectly the same, living in the same house. Everything amplifies. Everything. The sex can get better if everything else is in order, but generally you start to meet each other, start to have problems, start to really see the person. Usually in the early years of marriage, the sex gets worse. That's why people look at couples and say, honeymoon's over, I can tell on their face. Because most couples go, oh, this is great. It's not evil anymore. We're not sinning. Have at it. Then after that la-la passes, she's like, you know, I thought you paid that bill. I wanted to get these new bowling shoes, and I just didn't know that was going to happen. They calling me at work. They bother me with that. You know, it's all right, baby. We're going to be all right. Don't worry about it. And then it's really bothering her because her boss is saying, you're getting personal calls and they talk about garnishing your wages. What's that about? And that's embarrassing the heck out of her. But she didn't see our manager. He came and said, baby, you know, I got no money, baby. But you know what? Loan me some to Friday so we can go out. I thought you were supposed to be the provider. You better watch the men who borrow money from you while you're dating. I don't care if they ask for a dime. You better watch them. I'm saying throw them out. They may have other stuff that's good, and that might be the only flaw. So if you're dating somebody and he asks you for money, I'm not saying throw him out, but that means he better step it up in some other areas or you're fired. That's not a real man if that's manifesting in other areas. I'm not saying he's all this stuff. So don't, you know, you may be dating now and you're a man. Most of us men were not taught how to deal with our money. So that's most of us out there. That's why you go to good church and teach you how to deal with your money. So most of us didn't do it. So I know I'm talking about most men. That's why I said you can't throw them out or you never get married. But it depends on what else they got to come up to the level. Maybe he can. Maybe he's teachable. Maybe he's not proud where he'll let you manage the money. But if he's always asking you for money and you're going to marry him as your provider, you out of your mind. Unless you don't care about being provided for. And that may be your case. You might say, well, I don't care. My man don't have to be a provider. He ain't got to be no godly man. The Bible says a man does not take care of his family is worse than a sinner. The Bible in King James says infidel, but the literal is worse than unbeliever. A Christian man who does not take care of his family is worse than unbeliever. Now, take care doesn't mean Rolls Royces and Bentleys and all that. Take care means you're not worried about eating, sleeping, and drinking. The basic necessities of life you have. May not live on a house on the hill, but you are not in the gutter, living in a cardboard box with no address. He's taking care of your physical needs in the household and taking care of your shelter and things like that. He is financially providing a living for you. Now, if a guy can't even deal with you dating when he's living with his mama, how is he going to have money when he's got to take care of all of it? And see, the men, we would grow up if you got no loving and hugging and kissing if a girl said no. What's that one song they had out when them girls had girl groups had somebody? He's a scrub. A scrub can't get with me. You're trying to talk to me in your friend's car. You can't get with me. You get your own wheels. You know, women need to have a higher standard on guys, but women have been taught to be so insecure by all the makeup commercials and all this. You don't look beautiful. You don't look good. You need to do that. So most women are insecure. And then to make you feel more secure, all the commercials are telling me I need Clairol, I need faces, I need a facelift, I need a nose job, I need all of this. Something must be wrong with me. I don't look like the Vogue person. The Vogue person doesn't like a Vogue person. Tyra Banks will tell you they shave so much off me in photography and your baby got more back than they show on that commercial. They shave tons off of me. And she said, she says, when I model on the runway, I heard her the other day on a show, she said, when I go on the runway, she said, I always have full body makeup on. And I saw on a picture when she didn't have it on, she looked like Oprah with no makeup on. You know what I'm saying? Have you ever seen Oprah with no makeup on? She looked worse than the color purple, you know? But Oprah be looking good with her stuff on. You know, for a big bone sister, she be looking good. And I say, Oprah looking cute, look at Oprah. I say, Helen, Oprah look cute. Because I saw Oprah without makeup. I'm like, shoot, dog. Man, scare you. If that's the first time you saw her like that on honeymoon night, I'd be like, I want a refund, an annulment, I want something. Because you lied to me. If I knew you looked like that, I might have still married you, but I don't know what else is coming. I want to get out right now. Let me out now, the first night, let me out. But see, they tell you and they present that like that's what they look like. When a lot of stuff has been airbrushed, it's been made up, real women don't look like that. And Tara would tell you, I don't look like my pictures. I don't, but it's still presented that they do. So that makes a lot of women insecure. So you got all these young, beautiful, wonderful women out there who told you're ugly, you need makeup, you need all this other stuff. They're insecure. And then a guy comes and says, hey, baby, you're the finest thing I've ever seen. You rock my boat. You make my liver quiver. Girl, you look so good in those jeans. You know, you walking by and he whistling and catcalling. Girl, you're just so sweet. Be talking to the sisters then. You're so sweet. I can tell the love of God all over you. I stand next to you and it elevates my spirit. You know, and sister be, ooh, ooh, I think I got a case of the vapors. You go way back to Scarlett O'Hara in the South. And see, brother thought out of line big time. He thought out of line, same brother be hitting you in your head after you get married. And sometimes the smoother brothers are the more dangerous ones because they know what a woman needs. That's the ones you better watch, the ones who know what a woman needs and manipulates her to get it. That's the playboy, get you in the bed and he gone. He's gone, player big time. And he'll play you, he got a long list of people played him. I want to know who his friends are. You'll know a man by the company he keeps. You know a woman by the company he keeps. If she got a bunch of loudmouth, rebellious, women's lib, full friends, just leave her alone. Because it ain't, she, you know, like I said, the apples don't fall too far from the tree. You got to watch that. If he got a bunch of boys out there just knuckleheads and somehow you look, but he ain't like that. I don't know why he hang out with people like that. He ain't like that. You better go back to the Bible. School of the Bible. We on it right now. Bad company corrupts good character. If you keep bad company, it will corrupt you. And people hang around people who they like. If your friend, your boyfriend or girlfriend is choosing to hang around the wrong kind of people, they are influenced by the wrong kind of people. And even if they're decent now, they're on their way to becoming indecent because your company will corrupt you. And that's what Jesus said, not me. Bad company corrupts good character. And there are many people who are just on the verge of going down. Now, these are little idiosyncrasies and little tips that you can look at so that you can really tell who this person's going to be. And when I marry them, what are they going to be like? That way I can get my expectation. Do I know this man or this woman enough that I know what they're going to do? One person told me, they said, look at a girl's mother and about 25 years, 30 years, that's who she's going to be. And in most cases, that's true. Some cases are not because changes can come. Generally, education and born again experiences can change people. Person gets born again, they'd be totally different because they're not motivated by the same thing. A person gets education, they change because maybe they have more education than that person. But usually, a girl is going to be like her mother. Usually. And usually, a guy's going to be like his father. And sometimes you look at those future in-laws and you say, now, that didn't mean I'm going to throw this person out because maybe they've changed. But that does mean I better be cautious on that. I might not put a check, but I might put a question mark. Let me watch this. Let me see if they indicate any of this stuff. I'm not saying you don't date a guy because his dad was an alcoholic. I'm saying because his dad was an alcoholic, watch it. Because what his dad modeled to him is when enough stress in life comes, you hide in the bottle. And it's not that he wants to do it. Watch those people whose dad was an alcoholic and they say, I'll never be an alcoholic. I hated that so much as a kid. I said, when I grow up, I'm never going to be an alcoholic. Those usually become alcoholics because all they're telling you is what they don't want. They still don't know how to react any other way. Everybody's going to react according to the tape that's playing in their brain. I remember when everybody used to tell me how much I remind him of my father when he was young. I didn't know my father when he was young. So I'm like, I ain't nothing like dad. I'm not like my father. These people don't know me. They're crazy. But then I knew my dad as a married man, a young married man. And when I got married, I started doing stuff my dad was doing and just little stuff. Like my dad used to put all my wife did. He have a nice car. Maybe, you know, have a Cadillac, a nice car, a Lincoln, and put all this junk over the visor. You know, just be sticking toilet paper and just bills and just everything. And, you know, I'm like, you got this nice ride, Dad. You pimp your ride. Oh, you're looking good, Dad. And you got all this junk up there like you ain't playing it right. If I was going to drive the car, I'd pull all that junk out. I'm like, get all that junk up there. And one day I was just driving down the road after I got married. And I just looked up and went, oh my God. I had all this stuff up there. I was like, oh my, I have become my dad. I got a nice car, but got all this junk over the sun visor. I just didn't care no more. So obviously that same seed was in there. Because unless you learn something different, the same track is in there. And that person doesn't know what kind of married man they're going to be. But unless they had an uncle to influence them that's different or something like that, as soon as they get married, the track just starts playing. Why? It's the only track up there. If she is hard-headed and always into it with her husband, you better watch what's going to happen when you get married, because she take out that whole dating mode track and pop in the track of wife now. And the only model she has is her mother. If she don't see an aunt she identifies with or reading the word of God on the role of a woman or hearing Sister Helen teach about how to be a godly woman, she doesn't mean to do it. You have to, I don't know how to be a wife other than this. So unless she's re-educated, born again, retaught, and born again, still got to renew the mind, she will automatically put in the only track she's ever seen. He will automatically, they don't mean to when they, you believe in 100%. I'll never drink. I'm not into drinking. My dad drank, destroyed my family. My mother was hard-headed fighting my dad. I'm never going to do it. Never going to do that. But unless you know what causes that and you see it in there and you have relearned and you hear that person explaining why they're not going to do it, not the more they hate it, the more they're still emotionally tied to it, the more they're going to do it. A logical person say, my dad drank and, you know, I wouldn't drink. And the situations my dad got upset when he had lost his job and he started drinking. This is hypothetical. My dad didn't drink, but started drinking and so forth. You know what I would do in a situation like that, baby, is I would. And if he doesn't say it, you ask him, what would you do? If we lost a job, if we did this, what would you do? And if he say, I don't know, he'd do the same thing his dad did because that's the only tape he's got. He's letting you know I've not reprogrammed it. I've not put a different response in there if I have the same stimuli of that pressure. I do not have another tape. So this is what I would do. They'll never say that's what they're going to do. They'll say that's what I'm not going to do. But I'm telling you, you only know what you know. You only do what you know. If that's all you know, that when pressure comes, you get to say, you start hitting your wife like your dad did, you're going to haul off and hit your wife. Because in the absence of not knowing what to do, the tape's just going to say, hit her. And you counsel me and they say, I didn't want to hit her. It just came out of nowhere. I'm telling you, the tape plays. It didn't come out of nowhere. It was recorded, pre-recorded, for replay at another time. So you better make sure if that exists in the background, that does not mean you don't marry the person. That doesn't mean you run from them. That means big question mark that I need to look into this further before I would consider marrying this person. Does not mean you can't marry. I'm not saying because people have imperfect backgrounds, they can never be married. Their mom and dad got divorced. Don't marry them. They're going to get divorced. They're products of divorce. That doesn't mean that at all. It means they're more likely than people who had married people modeled to get divorced. That doesn't mean they will. It means it's more likely. But what do you do? Antennas go up. Let me begin to talk to him about, honey, what would you do if you lost your job? Honey, how would you act if somehow I was just not feeling good and I just got rebellious and up in your face? And if you hear him joke and say something, I'd knock you down. No, I'm just kidding, baby. You better listen to him. You better listen to him. Because, see, a real man don't even play like that. That's not even a joke. That's not even a loving thing to say. I'll knock you out. I'm just kidding. Yeah, right. I'm just kidding. Don't do it. This back to this thing here. When you get in a relationship with somebody, or if you're in a relationship now, you may have been dating a year, 2 years. Now let's just take these silly people who think 3 months is enough time to get married. They are almost 100% infatuation. They might be down to 98% infatuation, you know? And over here, let's say 50%. You really don't want to get married until you've got, I want to say more love, but some people are okay at 50-50, but you definitely don't want to have more infatuation than you have love. Why? Because you do like the guy who married the girl. They got married. They were married for 5 years. They really didn't date well and know each other well. Although it did all the stuff everybody else did. It got along fine. Everybody said, y'all been dating long enough to get married. Dad said, oh, yeah, you can have my daughter, so forth. They were fine. Everybody, nobody was beating anybody. Nobody was doing anything. They had a good marriage. But it was based on fellowship and things in common. It wasn't based on godly love. So when she had to have a double breastectomy, he never wanted to have sex with her again. And he honestly was just saying, I can't. It's not that I don't want to. I just can't. You know, every time I see it, I don't want to touch her because he didn't like the scar tissue. Now, you don't want to have sex with your wife. And you know she must really be hurting because it didn't like she said, take my breasts off. They're too heavy. She wanted to keep them. But the chemo and the cancer, they had to take them off. And he wouldn't touch her and have sex with her anymore because of the scar tissue. Did he love her? How much did he love her? Is she her breast? He was still in infatuation because he was obviously more infatuated with her breast than he was in love with her person. Can you see that? If you mess around and get one of these quick 3 months, 6 months, or non-communicative, you can date 8 years, but non-communicatively, and you just, if you mess around and marry this person on this side of love, all it takes is one tragedy and they will leave you. And you won't even understand it because you may really love them. You may have made the decision that I would love you to have to do his part. You trusted him or her saying that. Something happens like the mother comes to live with you. I'm out of here. I'm tired of your mom. I'm leaving. I thought you loved me. and goodness. I mean, good and bad and sickness and health and richer and poor. I thought you loved me. Baby, I'm tired of not having bills. I'm tired of having all these bills. I don't love you no more. For richer or poor and sickness and in health. Those are just words. People don't pay any attention to them when they don't understand love. Love actually goes in gear the greatest when it sees the other person with the greatest need. Somebody's weak in an area. They're not doing well. That's when you really kick in to love them. Because, see, you don't need love the rest of the time. You only need love when the other person requires the love. Oh, man, you know, I remember that minister that had fallen, and Brother Hagin had such an outpouring of love. The minister had fallen, had come to the crusade, and everybody said, take his license away, kick him out the ministry. He let everybody down. He's no good. And they're calling God for repentance. He needs to step down until he got things straight. There's no reason to be out of ministry forever. But everybody just kicked him to the curb. They wanted him out. And he was at the meeting, and Brother Hagin looked down, and the guy was just there as a parishioner, just trying to get the word. And he wasn't per se in our camp, but he was trying to find some restoration. So in his camp, they were all kicking him and trying to beat him down, throw him out of ministry, tell him what a dog he is. So he came over. He was at one of the meetings there at Rhema. And our brother Hagin said, hey, brother so-and-so, let's all just give him a hand clap. We appreciate him so much. And all he's done, he's led thousands to the Lord. And there's people going to heaven because of brother so-and-so and so forth. And you could tell just his countenance lifted just as somebody was showing love. He needed it most right then when he was down. Don't you need the most love when you're feeling the least loved? But when a person has made a mistake, they know they made a mistake. They know they're not doing right. And then people start kicking them. You bad, you terrible, ugly thing. You never had any love for them because that's the time they need to love. But most people are, long as things are well, they think they love you. You make mistakes and have problems and they begin to get on the devil's side against you. You know that wasn't love. That was you made me feel. Now you don't make me feel anymore. And that's so easy. That happens to me. It happens to Helen. It happens to almost every married person. That's why we all have to mature to where we really have a love walk if we want to remain happy and have joy in marriage. That's why you have to really know a person, because I can't make you love somebody who you have determined to be unlovable. But if you don't determine it because you just going along with the dream and infatuation, you don't even know who you're marrying. Then you find out that's a little more work than I want. The Bible's saying you stay, but you're saying, but I'm unhappy. I want out. The Bible's saying stay. There you have it. You either divorce, the heck with God, I'm out of here. Or you say, you know, this just not happy, though. Well, you got to pray for them and work with them to grow up and live a Christian life in front of them. But I'm not getting anything back. Well, you know, love never fails. You got to stay in it, sister. You got to stay with it. We have women at this church right now who say, oh, God, Pastor Cook, I just wish to God my husband would come to church. I know the word would bless him. I mean, we ain't trying to take number. He just think God is so bad. He's so, I just wish he'd come. One of them, a situation was they were not born. They were both not born again. And then they got married and she got born again and he didn't. And of course, he's a heathen. And he want to do his own thing and so forth. And it's just hard for her because she knows she can't have a godly, loving relationship because he doesn't know how to do it. The other one, you got both of them are kind of Christian, but the other one's kind of backslidden. You got all this kind of stuff going on. And God didn't intend any of that, but you're supposed to check them out first. The one who was both unsaved when he got married, she got the lot that she's in. The other one knew better, but wanted to be married. Was in love with him. You better check him and her out, because you will be and can be very, very unhappy. And people get married and get deceived. They say, you know what? I'm getting married because, you know, I'm tired of being single. I want sex. I want a man to be with me. I want a woman to be with me. I want my own one. Give me mine. I'm tired of being alone. You don't even say nothing about it. I just want to love somebody. I want somebody to love me. When you talk like that, you ain't ready for marriage. And you know that's the way most of you talk. That's the way mostly everybody talks, because we're self-centered and we're selfish. The biggest problem in marriage is selfishness. Now, lack of communication is very important. Don't get wrong, but lack of communication is a product of selfishness to some degree, too. Selfishness means I'm getting married for me. And I've determined that I've dated you long enough that you make me feel good about myself. You're OK. You're on my list. That yes, you make me feel OK. It's still about me. What did I say when it's time to get married? When you got such an abundance of love, you want to give it to somebody else for the rest of their life. Folk ain't even thinking about that in marriage. They're thinking about, what can I get for me? I'm tired of being alone. He would make me not be alone. You know, boy, she look good. I got sex with her. I'm tired of, you know, I want a girl that fine to fulfill my needs. It's all about you. Long as you're thinking about you, you need to stay single. Because you're going to be somebody's problem, and then they're going to get mad when you treat them like that with such selfishness, and they're not going to be what you want. And whatever you expect is not going to happen because your selfishness sabotaged it. Because you reap what you sow, and you can get married to a nice person and keep sowing the wrong stuff to one day they just say, forget this. Forget this. We're going to take a break, and they got to switch to CD, and then we'll come back and we'll finish up on next CD. Are you getting anything yet?
Yes.
Let's take a 5-minute break and we'll start right back up. We're going to dismiss.